Well, this hour, it's the interactive portion of the show. John Rappaport with us and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, John Rappaport with us. We'll get to your calls as well. John, you continue looking at also the possible dangers of vaccinations. What have you unraveled here?
Well, I think one of the big unreported stories is the next generation of vaccines, which are being called DNA vaccines. They're being researched now. There are human clinical trials underway. A major article appeared in 2015 in the New York Times about this. The idea is to actually synthesize genes and inject them into the human body as a way of supposedly bringing on immunity to various diseases.
Almost like stem cells, but they make them up.
They make them up, and they admit that this permanently alters your DNA.
Oh, great.
Yeah, exactly. So for the rest of one's life, whoever would receive these vaccines would have altered genetic makeup. That would be untold. I mean, how many people in the world get vaccines now? So if this next generation of vaccines comes to pass, we're talking about the genetic alteration of the human species,
which you cannot reverse.
Correct. You would not be able, it's permanent. And the article in the Times made this very clear. And they interviewed a Nobel Prize winning biologist, and he said, yes, it sounds very interesting, but you know, some people might object to the idea of having their DNA permanently altered. Really, you think so? Absolutely. But the public is not aware of this, even though the research effort is continuing apace. And there is the very real possibility that this is going to be the next generation of vaccination.
I'm sure they've tested this on animals and rats before, and I wonder if anything's happened and they're just not telling us.
That's possible. And also, the long-term effects would not be obvious. So what you get is everything looks good in the short run, but you permanently alter somebody's genetic makeup, and there are consequences down the road,
right,
that you would never be able to connect to what happened with the vaccines.
Or fix,
exactly, because you've now essentially invented a new type of human who has his or her own diseases and problems and issues and so forth that are the ripple effect of changing their DNA.
And what if you pass it on to offspring, John?
This is something breeding that I've been trying to look into. Apparently, and I have to put that in quotes, it doesn't pass on. I can't guarantee that, but it is there for the lifetime of the person. There is the possibility, I would think, that they could be passed on generation.
Well, you would think if someone's DNA was affected and changed, and then they have children, that DNA will be passed on to the new child.
That's my provisional conclusion. I've read pieces that claim this is not the case. I think it's all up for grabs. I mean, this is exceedingly dangerous. It's going on out of view. It's not being widely reported or investigated by the mainstream press. It'll be sprung on the population if the clinical trials are acceptable to, say, the FDA in America and other public health agencies. And major pharmaceutical companies are poised to make fantastic profits off of this, so you know that they're going to be pushing it. And they'll be framing it in terms of, this is much better than the old vaccine, much safer, et cetera, et cetera.
Works better, that kind of thing.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, boy, here we go. Let's take some calls here. Our special guest, John Rappaport, he'll be with us this hour for your calls. Let's start by going to first-time caller Amanda in Queensbury, New York. Hello, Amanda. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us.
Thank you. A little nervous is my first call, but I'm calling about the opioid crisis.
Sure.
And the problem is that you can't catch it from the back end. You got to start from where it stems. You guys were talking about prices on the street. Heavy drugs such as morphine, Dilaudid, I mean, go for $1 to $5 per milligram. So when people run out of this or can't afford that, oh, it's just cheaper to go buy a bag of heroin.
Yeah.
And then, and that kind of ties into what I was going to say is that I believe, and I've seen that this all starts from people that are on medication. I'm a recovering addict myself, and I started.
How old are you?
I'm 30.
Okay. Yeah, you're young.
I was going to say, how old were you
when you started this?
In my late teens and early 20s, I was prescribed tramadol before it was a controlled substance. And, you know, some people get hooked and have a taste, and some people don't. But the people that do have a taste or get hooked, you know, you start taking more than you're prescribed, and you run out. So you get, you know, you start with pain, you know, pain pills. You start low, hydrocodones or something. And then, you know, your tolerance builds, and then it gets to the point where you've done it so much that you're now not even trying to get high. You're just trying to maintain so that you don't have withdrawals.
Right. Your body and needs it.
Exactly. And the withdrawals are horrible. I mean, they can't really kill you like alcohol withdrawals can, but the symptoms are very severe. You can be hospitalized.
Have you ever, what has been your worst withdrawal for yourself?
When I stopped using heavily, and it lasts, you know, anywhere from 3 days to a week. But I'll tell you what, if you suffer through it, you can get through it. But it's very hard. You have to have a lot of support from people around you. You have to be physically prepared for all of this.
I mean, are you going off the wall when this is happening? You shaking, chills, all that stuff that we hear about?
Yes. Yes, and you get restless legs, like you feel like you just have to kick your legs, your skin crawls, you get anxiety. I mean, it truly is the worst. I'd rather go through childbirth again than, you know, experience withdrawals. And it just gets to the point where you're maintaining and you're like, why am I'm not going to spend all this money on these pills when I can just do heroin. And then you get introduced to the heroin.
All right, well, let's bring John in here for a second. John, she was saying exactly what you've said, and she's a person who's been on the streets, that people will turn to something that they can afford, like heroin.
Exactly. And the supply is there. I mean, you know, when there's a demand, there's going to be a supply. So people can then switch over, and they do, to heroin and so forth. The one thing that I didn't get a chance to mention, and this is extremely important, is that the designer versions of these drugs, which are coming in part from illegal labs in China.
And what do you mean by designer versions?
Well, just as with certain psychedelic drugs, we saw synthetics that were made that were somewhat similar to LSD, et cetera, et cetera. The same thing has happened with these opioids.
Okay.
All and right. These designer versions are much more powerful and dangerous. In fact, some of them can cause immediate death. There is no addiction. You just die. And so-called first responders, people from police departments, federal law enforcement, and so forth, are warned that if they intercede and they catch a shipment and so forth, they have to avoid contact or breathing.
Oh, my God. Like,
if it's one of these versions that I'm talking about.
Is fentanyl considered part of that?
The spin-offs, the designer spin-offs from fentanyl are definitely considered to be part of what I'm talking about here. So we're talking about extreme danger, and you will get some of these designer versions mixed in with a normal prescription opioids, and nobody can tell. It's just all powder or whatever it is. So this is
scary.
You know, it just spirals completely out of control.
Let's go to Thomas in La Jolla, California. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
George, thank you for taking my call, sir. And John, you know, I've read many of your essays over the years, but the most impressive essays, in my opinion, that you wrote were on personal creativity and the empowerment of the individual. And you seem to, again, in my opinion, you seem to imply that any man, any woman at any age can choose to ignite the creative fires within themselves and perhaps resurrect the internal genius. And you spoke about using art and other things. And I'm curious if you've pursued that, if you have books, videos, CDs, or anything that you wrote so well about, you know, in terms of empowering the individual to be creative, to push back against these problems, such as globalism, opioids, Kilauea, et cetera.
Well, yes, absolutely, I pursued this. And, you know, at my site, No More Fake News, you can see what's available on that score. The thing is, I would never have been able to investigate and cover all the stories that I have over the last 35 years. I mean, I just wouldn't have been able to keep up the effort if it were not for my underlying conviction that the individual can resurrect his own life through creativity, imagination, and proof positive that I've seen in many, many lives that this is so. And that the future really is open. It is, the die has not been cast. In the long-term view of civilization and society, it always comes back to the individual and what the individual potential is and whether a person taps that creative potential in order to solve, for example, problems in innovative ways that have never been thought of, in order to create the future that he or she really desires. All of these things are at the bottom of my work, and they are the ultimate motivation for what I do. When I present the scandals, the investigations, and so forth in my articles, what I'm really doing is pointing out, look, this is the reality that has been created for us by elites who are bent on the idea of controlling the future and controlling humankind. We, as individuals, have great power to invent our own reality. And that's where the game really takes a new turn and the very positive aspects come out. So I'm very glad you mentioned this because this is, in fact, what keeps me going. It's not just reporting on the news behind the news, but it's turning the tables, so to speak, and saying, look, the individual is capable of tremendous, tremendous potential to invent and create better reality for himself and for everybody else.
John, how long have you had the No More Fake News website?
Yes.
You've had it way before it even became famously known.
Yeah, why didn't I trademark this and start collecting royalties?
Really?
Fake news. 2001, because...
Ahead of your time.
By that time, I had seen what the mainstream press was doing in terms of fake news, so one day I came up with that idea, and my wife said, that's it, you got to do that.
Grab it.
I said, let's go.
Let's go to Aurora on the big island of Hawaii, west of the Rockies. How's the volcano, Aurora? Are you safe?
Yeah, I'm actually halfway in between both volcanoes, and I used to be the closest resident to Puna Geothermal Venture for over 25 years.
Geez.
And John, he's telling the truth.
About the fracking?
The eruption that started in 83 started where geothermal was drilled.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if he knows that in this last week, the owners of the Puna Geothermal Venture power plant came onto island from Israel. And they mentioned, the mayor let it be known that they said, we didn't intend to harm anyone. We're just a power plant. It's true. What PGV and what geothermal has done on this island has been very, very damaging.
Did they basically admit that they were the cause?
The truth of what's going on, what you guys see from the outside of what's going on. There's been more going on that plant. I've had drillers move next door to me over the 30 years I lived there, mm-hmm. and I always asked them what was going on, and they said it's not what it appears. It appears to be an electrical power plant. In reality, what I see is it's not only fracking with water; they're fracking with frequencies. People can look it up. That was called the Mystery Boom. It displaced so much water that was in, you know, these mystery booms that happen on the planet.
Yes.
They thought it happened at the power plant. And I saw the high tide come as high as it could be down at the hot pond to as low as it could be within 1 hour's time.
Jeez.
Every time something happens, that power plant is surrounded by military. From my experience of being there, it is a DARPA weapon, frequency weapon site.
John, what do you think of that?
Wow.
That's a first,
no question about it. The idea of using frequencies, of course, to create fractures and so forth would be extremely easy to do. And as the listener mentions, obviously, this would have nothing to do with producing energy. It would be what you could call a weapons facility or a weapons test facility. And if this is actually what's been happening there, I would really urge people who have this knowledge that has not been reported to start reporting it as citizen reporters. This is amazing.
She's verifying what you've been talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And she pegs, you know, the beginning of the construction there. I mean, this place has been, officially active since 1993, but the construction started long before then.
Is this the facility where they said the lava was getting close to it?
Yes.
That's the same one.
That's the one. You can see the pictures. You can see that supposedly there were chemicals on site there at Puna that they shipped away. I don't know what the chemicals were for, because supposedly they're only putting water down into the ground. So what are these big containers of chemicals all about? They've closed down the place. It hasn't, at last report, been completely overrun by lava. But what she's saying is amazing.
True. Absolutely. Do you think the governor of Hawaii is aware of this?
You know, if I had to bet, I would say yes. I would say there are a number of officials there that would be aware of what's actually going on there, because stories leak out, as this listener has reported, for example. We're talking about a long time that this facility has been there. So I would say that there are a number of officials out there in Hawaii who have more than an inkling of what's actually been going on there and what earthquakes and other disruptions have been caused, and they're not saying anything.
Maybe some of the mainstream media, John, after this program, will start asking some questions when they cover that volcano. What do you think?
Man, I really hope so. I wouldn't bet on it, but you can never tell, because you've got millions of listeners out there, and if they begin using social media, for example, who knows what might happen.
Here. We're coming back with final calls with John Rappaport in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. John, these opioids, are they addicting? Is that part of the problem?
Absolutely addicting, you bet. Not all people react in exactly the same way, but for millions of people, they are absolutely addicting. And as one of the listeners reported, attempting to withdraw from them is exceedingly dangerous and has many, many horrendous effects. So that locks a lot of people in.
You can't just stop, because if you do, you could die of a heart attack, couldn't you?
Yeah, there's all kinds of horrendous things that could happen. So if you were able to withdraw gradually under the care of somebody who really was a professional and knew what was happening, sure. But the trouble is that many people are forced into withdrawal because they can't afford the drugs anymore, or they disappear, the dealer goes away. And then what are they going to do? They go through withdrawals, or they seek out heroin, which has its own horrendous problems.
Recently, we lost some more people. Kate Spade, the designer, Anthony Bourdain, the CNN food host for his TV show. What kind of depression hits people so hard, John, where they have to do this and kill themselves?
That's a long story. But I can tell you this. I recently wrote and posted an article. A new study has discovered that over 200 drugs, medical drugs on the market, drugs you would not expect, such as antacids, proton pump inhibitors, et cetera, cause depression.
Jeez.
Indeed. All manner of over-the-counter and prescription drugs. Some of them have warnings buried in the package insert about depression. Others say nothing. But this study discovered that indeed all of these medical drugs conspire to cause depression in untold numbers of people. So what do? They go back to the doctor. They're diagnosed with clinical depression. Then they're put on the antidepressants, such as Zoloft, Paxil, et cetera, and these drugs carry extreme dangers of all kinds, including suicide, violence, aggression, homicide, et cetera, which we've discussed on this program before. So this is not known to the public at large, and no deep investigations are being done on this as of yet as to all of these drugs on the market that are causing depression. So it's quite possible you have a person who's taking, you know, this drug and that drug, and it doesn't seem to be all that dangerous and so forth. And then a few months later, all of a sudden, they feel extremely depressed, and they don't know why. And their doctor wouldn't know why either, because he isn't tuned into the fact that all of these medicines that have been approved by the FDA that seemingly have nothing to do with depression one way or another are actually causing depression.
How do these doctors stay on top of all these drugs that keep coming to market?
They can't.
They can't do that.
No.
Is it a salesperson from the drug company that basically drops by the office and says, here's some samples or something?
Sure. And that salesperson is also educated to be able to say, read this study, look at this, and so on. And the doctor who's extremely busy is able to scan a few studies and say, well, you know, it looks like this drug is pretty good. I think I'll start using it. But they have no time and in many cases no inclination to dig deeper to see what's really involved with these many, many drugs that are coming on the market. They just can't keep up.
No, they can't. Let's go to Cornelius in Alexandria, Louisiana. Hey, stranger, welcome to the show.
Okay, Georgie. Hey there, Mr. Rappaport and Tommy Danheiser, our great producer and stuff. John, I got to say, you're right on top of it, and all these other callers and stuff, George, that are giving you firsthand information.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
I used to be a military police officer, John, and the FBI and the Federal Bureau of Prisons went after me and destroyed my career because I was a whistleblower about some things that was happening down there in Oakdale, Louisiana. But what I want to ask you, John, I think the deep state is after Trump and everything, and they're trying to destroy him also by making up this fake Russia investigation. I want your thoughts on that. God bless you, George, and you be careful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Go ahead, John. I'll let you jump in on that.
Well, as far as I see, because I've been following the whole Russiagate business, you know, if a federal agency says we have the evidence that Trump and Russia, Putin, whoever, you know, conspired to do this and that and influence the election, let's see the specifics. Lay out the evidence, not this dossier that was put together by an ex-British spy, but let's see the whole thing on the table. And other reporters, I mean, it's not just me, have been saying the same thing. Reporters on the left, reporters on the right. There is no conclusive evidence that's been put together by Mueller and his team that this has actually taken place. And it just goes on and on and on forever. The problem that Trump has created, regardless of what you think of him, doesn't matter. is that he decided to make globalism versus nationalism a major issue in the campaign. And he talked about it at length, on and on and on, about the loss of jobs in America due to trade treaties that were instigated by globalists and so on and so forth. And even if you believe that he never intended to really do anything about this, he was just mouthing off and trying to win votes, he raised the issue, which had been buried by major media. And it came out to such a degree, and so many people, especially in independent media, began highlighting it, that it has become something of a major threat to Bilderbergers, Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, various elite global organizations, who have decided that they have to try to stop this in every way possible. And so, of course, one of their targets is going to be Trump himself.
Next up, let's go to Sherry in Memphis, Tennessee, east of the Rockies. Hi, Sherry. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I always love it when John Rappaport is on.
He's great.
And I'm French. I have a question about the globalists as to whether or not you think they are very good at doing the right thing, because they kicked out the Shah and put in Khomeini, and they kicked out Hussein, and they went into Iraq, and if Iran and Iraq had kept on fighting and they hadn't kicked out Hussein, then they wouldn't have, Iran wouldn't have money for all this terrorism and melting bombs and rockets. And they wanted to have a stock market crash if Hillary became president 3 months into her presidency. So what do you think about whether or not they do the right thing?
Well, I think they do the wrong thing, in a word. Globalism is a movement that basically, and we've discussed this on the program before, they want to run planet Earth. They've decided this is a great idea to control.
Because they're bored with everything else, John.
Well, they certainly don't need any more money, that's for sure. And they don't really need to do anything in their lives. So for them, the only thing that stimulates their adrenaline, let's say,
it's an aphrodisiac, for
is control and power. Yeah, and it's been, you know, understood for a long time that there are people in the human species who are like this, that they have their own creative instincts. Their life force, shall we say, is so deadened by various factors that all that's left for them is the pleasure, the perverse pleasure of controlling others. So they devise more and more sophisticated methods of trying to do this worldwide. And they create organizations that do this. They create trade treaties. They influence governments. They are a kind of shadow government, both in and outside of governments. That's their work. That's what they're devoted to. And anyone who challenges this becomes a kind of threat, and they try to discredit them.
Or eliminate them.
Or, in some cases, eliminate them. That's right. So what we're looking at here is what I would consider now a counter-revolution that's been going on for some time, but has recently surfaced for the public to see, that globalism is really a threat to every nation, not just the United States. It's a threat to every nation that wants to be free, that wants to have some degree of individual self-sufficiency, doesn't want to be saddled with incredible numbers of rules and regulations, such as the European Union imposes on the population. They don't want to have arbitrary super governments telling them what to do. And this counter-revolution is gaining momentum as we speak.
Let us go now to Christian in San Pedro, California. Christian, good morning to you and welcome to the program.
Hello, George. It's my birthday today.
Well, happy birthday.
I just wanted to say, you pretty much, John, I found out that in 2016, in June of 2016 at the Bilderberg Conference, the entire, I think, 2 or 3 days of the conference was actually dedicated to well, what do we do if Donald Trump becomes president? You know, how are we going to stop him? So it just goes to show that I've been very suspicious from the very beginning about all this Russia collusion nonsense. I think it's been fabricated.
Set up, huh?
I think that, look, do you feel that, like you just said, Donald Trump is a threat to essentially the new world order? Because sometimes I get confused. Is Trump really legitimate, like what he says? He cares about the country. He wants to restore, take back, you know, whatever sovereignty of this country that we have left. Is he a puppet? Because the problem is that CNN, Fox News, just so, dominant, you know, and just the propaganda is incredible.
Why? What's your thoughts on that, John? Where does he stand?
Propaganda is incredible. You know, what I focus on, just the way I focused when Ron Paul was more in the public eye, is the people. The people who suddenly wake up, in Trump's case, regardless of whether they believe in him or they think that he's a narcissist or whatever. But what they wake up to is a message that gets to them that says, look, your freedom is important. The individual's freedom is important. The individual's power is important. We shouldn't be living in a world where control of the whole population is a good thing. It's not a good thing. And this freedom message comes through many, many, many channels. And as it so happened in the 2016 presidential campaign and election, it surfaced. It surfaced in the person of Trump and others, and millions of people began to think about these things on their own. That's what's important to me. And I see this reflected in readers of my work and the readers of other people's work that I would classify as independent media. And this movement is definitely gaining steam.
No, yes, it is. It. Let's go to Frank in Hollywood, Maryland to get a call in here. Frank, go ahead.
I enjoyed glad to be back with you.
Thanks.
On the immigration thing, did Ronald Reagan in the 1980s, did he sign an executive order or did he sign a piece of legislation adopted by Congress? And then the Iranian Revolution, when Jimmy Carter sent over those billy clubs and shields, that helped set the thing off worse than what it was. And then, Iran had not been adequately punished for seizing those hostages. The Ayatollah, with a blink of an eye, could have released them. Yet we hit dealing Hawk missiles and TOWs, anti-tank weapons, for the release of the hostages. And the Reagan administration said, well, they were dealing with moderates in Iran. What moderates were they talking about? And then
Let's take a question because we've only got about a minute left, John. Ronald Reagan did sign the Immigration Reform and Control Act into law that was passed by Congress in 1986. Go ahead, John.
Well, I think as far as Iran goes, and we only have a minute here, we talked about this earlier in the show, there was an order from the U.S., official order, to the military and the secret police over there to stand down and let the revolution proceed. And if you remember history, as soon as Reagan was elected, the hostages were released. It was more than just a happy occasion. Obviously, there was something on the board's plan there. They didn't want Carter to have this victory because then he might have been reelected. There was a whole lot of manipulation behind the scenes there, no question.
There sure is. John, keep in touch and come back anytime, my friend, okay?
Thank you so much, George.
John Rappaport. His websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, top research into extraterrestrial phenomena and other experiences. Johnny Enoch joins us on Coast to Coast AM.